Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Modern Energy Management Podcast. My name is Amber Artrip, and I am the producer and host of this show. The Modern Energy Management Podcast is the only podcast for energy, sustainability, and building professionals to hear real-life stories from their peers on how they are using best practices and technology to modernize their buildings. Today, we have a very important episode all about New York City's Local Law 97, everything building owners should know, and how to prepare for this mandate. We are joined by Thomas Morrison, who is the Director of Energy Management at NPower Group. Thanks so much for joining us, Thomas.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Amber. I really appreciate the opportunity to discuss Local Law 97 and modern energy management and some of the many challenges and opportunities that the New York City marketplace is presenting the building owners and managers here with these new green laws like Local Law 97, also known as the Climate Mobilization Act.
Thanks again for being here, Thomas. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into the industry and your work at NPower?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My background in the energy space really started back when I was in college, and I started working for a family friend at their utility consulting company, the Columbia Group. And under the tutelage of Jim Cotton and Andrea Crane, I cut my teeth analyzing national utility rates throughout various electric and gas utilities in the country. And the basis of that analysis was used for rate cases to come up with new rates throughout the country. And then throughout college, I focused my studies on environmental science, and I did my senior thesis on wind energy, and realized during that experience working and during college the value of consultants to the business community. And so following graduation, I started working at MC Energy, which was then later bought by Yardi Energy Systems. And at MC Energy, I was the senior energy analyst, where I worked with a number of major commercial real estate portfolios in the greater New York City market on a number of energy management and metering initiatives. And for the past 9 years, I've been working at NPower Group, and I'm the Director of Energy Management. So
that sounds great. Can you tell us a little bit about what NPower does and your role there?
Sure. NPower is a full service engineering, design, and energy management consulting firm. We work with a number of customers from different verticals, especially multifamily buildings, hotels, and commercial offices. And I support a number of areas of the business operations, particularly your typical energy management issues like budgeting, due diligence reviews, capital planning, benchmarking, auditing, local law compliance. I also tackle a lot of smart metering and implementation of smart building technologies, as well as, you know, the implementation of actual energy efficiency projects, whether from a project identification to the development of that project on through the implementation. I also get involved with a lot of the different utility and state rebate programs that are out there. And I've worked with customers to secure millions of dollars in incentives. And of course, in the last year, I've spent a lot of time as an educator, educating my clients about the new local laws like Local Law 97 and how it affects the built environment and how it's going to present both challenges and opportunities for their portfolios.
Sounds like we have the right guy on the phone for this episode then. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we first learned about Local Law 97 because we do a lot of business in New York. A lot of our customers own and manage buildings in the New York City area. And this mandate popped up on our radar because our customers were asking us, what can we do to meet this mandate? And what we're learning is a lot of these laws are happening all over the country, different cities. Almost every major city has some sort of energy mandate or law. So I know you're doing a lot to educate folks in New York about local law 97. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is?
Sure. So the very simplest explanation about local law 97, also known as the Climate Mobilization Act, is it is a law that sets an emissions limit for buildings that are 25,000 square feet and above. So in 2017, the Mayor's Office of Sustainability published a report, the inventory of New York City greenhouse gas emissions, and their findings was that, you know, about 50,000 buildings in New York City were responsible for producing about 30% of all the city's emissions. So New York City buildings became a big target for reducing those emissions. And so we've had a number of laws created prior to that, including, you know, Local Law 84, which requires buildings 25,000 square feet and above to be benchmarked on an annual basis, and Local Law 87, which requires buildings 50,000 square feet and above to have an energy audit and retro commissioning be completed once every 10 years. And so the results of the benchmarking, which has been in place since 2011, and the energy audits, which have been happening since 2013, is that the city realized the opportunity within the built environment to reduce emissions, and so began targeting the larger buildings, those 25,000 feet and above, which makes up over 20,000 buildings are 25,000 feet and above, to have their emissions reduced. And the nuts and bolts of it are they've set two different targets, one that takes into effect in 2024 through 2029, and the next that takes into effect in 2030 and goes through 2034. And what that target says is that buildings, based on their occupancy classification, which could be a hotel, a multifamily building, a commercial office building, a warehouse, each of those different types of buildings has an emissions limit that's set in kilograms or metric tons of CO2 equivalent per square foot. And the emissions are calculated simply by the total utility consumption within a building. So you're typically looking at your scope one emission sources, like the on-site burning of natural gas and fuel oil, and then your scope two emissions, including the electricity purchased from the grid, as well as district steam. In New York City, we have the largest district steam system by Con Edison, and there are a number of large buildings that draw steam from the system to provide both heating and cooling. So the sum of all that utility usage converted into emissions over your square foot is the determination for, you know, whether or not a building exceeds or is below the emissions limit.
So that's a lot. And I'm sure that building owners are trying to make sense of all of this and figure out what they can do today to prepare for what this mandate is going to require them to do so they don't owe money. So what can they do to prepare, and what role does technology play in this preparation?
Sure, Amber. I think I'm going to answer that question in two parts. So what I did not include in my previous statement was that the buildings that actually exceed the emissions limits are subject to fines in the amount of $268 per metric ton of CO2 equivalent. And to answer your question, you know, one method for a building owner to comply with Local Law 97 would simply be to pay those fines if their building is exceeding the emissions. Now, if they go ahead and just pay those fines, it's really a lose-lose situation for the building, because those fines are going to happen annually and they get no benefit by paying those fines. You know, so we would look at and recommend a number of different, you know, opportunities and things that a building could do to, you know, mitigate the potential fines. The law includes the opportunity for buildings to offset up to 10% of their emissions with local renewable energy credits or RECs, but those credits have to be fed directly into the New York City grid. The law also allows for a emissions trading scheme, which is currently under investigation, and recommendations will be made to building owners by 2021. And then, of course, you know, really the best way for buildings to, you know, move forward and prepare for the law and to avoid any penalties is through energy conservation and the implementation of energy efficiency projects. So starting at the building envelope, you know, you would look at replacing your windows, replacing your roof, sealing the penetrations, air that could be coming into the building, as well as doing a better job insulating the overall envelope. And then within the envelope, we would look at a number of, you know, traditional and some more modern approaches to, you know, energy efficiency, you know, including upgrading the heating and cooling system, also moving toward a more modular heating and cooling system, whereas instead of having one giant boiler or one giant chiller for a building, you would have multiple boilers and multiple chillers that are much smaller and that incrementally come on to meet the building demands, since those larger systems typically are designed for peak days or those days that are the hottest or those days that are the coldest. Other things that have generated a lot of, especially fuel savings, are switching to a separate domestic hot water system. So in New York City, a lot of buildings use those large boilers to generate hot water throughout the summer, and that uses a tremendous amount of fuel, whereas dedicated smaller hot water heating systems to provide showers and hot waters at the sink are much more efficient and use less fuel. Of course, you know, heating and cooling distribution controls and BMS systems are another popular mechanism for reducing energy consumption, installing variable frequency drives, installing solar panels and energy storage, upgrading to LED lights and installing controls where there aren't any, and even implementing submetering and metering programs throughout the building to understand how you're using the energy, where you're using the energy, so that you can identify those excess uses and just do operational changes instead of investing money in a more efficient technology. And of course, you know, it would go without saying that the local law 97 also has a compliance pathway for multifamily buildings that have one or more affordable units. And those buildings actually do not have to pay fines, but instead they have to implement a set of mandatory energy efficiency measures, you know, that are detailed throughout the law.
Fascinating. It sounds like there's lots of different ways that people can go about reducing energy, and it would be worth it to try at least just one and see how far you get versus just paying the fines, because that, you know, year over year will add up for sure.
Absolutely. And when you go ahead and actually implement, you know, whether it's an operational change to reduce your energy or you go forward with a capital improvement and you upgrade your equipment to a more efficient technology, you have a lot of benefits there. You know, for one, right off the bat, you're going to reduce your energy consumption, which also means you're going to reduce your energy cost. And when you reduce your energy cost, you're reducing your net operating expense. And so when you reduce that operating expense, that also thereby increases the valuation of that particular building. So it's really a win-win-win when you go forward with those energy conservation measures or those operational changes that lead to permanent demand or energy reduction.
You might even say it makes good business sense to take what you would pay in fines for your building and invest that in energy conservation measures, because that's going to pay off year over year in energy savings.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you use that potential value of what you may pay in fines as your starting point for a capital budget, you're going to come out ahead, you know, if the amount of money you've invested in energy efficiency measures is the same or even less than what that potential fines could have been.
So to the second part of this question, what factor does technology play in this fact?
Absolutely, Amber. Thank you for reminding me of that really important question. So, you know, the old saying is we can't manage what we don't understand, and technology plays a very important role in helping building owners and operators to understand how they are using energy. You know, at the very basic of that is, you know, folks, you know, need to use, you know, and leverage a utility data tracking tool or dashboard that helps them understand how much energy their building is currently using and how that translates into things like emissions. And, you know, and that provides a baseline for how the current operations and initiatives will impact the future energy usage. So these systems, you know, typically have historical tracking, whether that's tracking of your utility usage, your cost, other metrics like occupancy, weather, and more systems are starting to track building equipment, which is becoming more and more important. And, you know, today's cutting edge tools and dashboards, you know, technology really allows the building owners and managers to do continuous benchmarking. And continuous benchmarking is, you know, constantly and continuously tracking that utility usage. And we're not just talking about the monthly usage from the utility bill, but, you know, usage that's down to the minute or down to the second from, you know, whether it's the whole building meter or down to individual pieces of equipment. And by doing that continuous benchmarking, facilities can, you know, understand important KPIs to their building, like electricity consumption per degree day or per occupant or per square foot, how their Energy Star score is now, was in the past, and might be in the future with different changes, and what their current emissions are, how those emissions, you know, relate to their goals or to what the laws and compliance targets might be. So by continuously benchmarking and monitoring buildings' utility usage, it puts the owners and managers in a better position to, you know, really understand what's going on, manage what's going on, and then plan for the future and make sure that they are achieving the goals that they set out to do.
I really love that part on continuous benchmarking. When we talked before, that really stuck out to me because we see it happen all the time. Buildings will run an energy conservation measure, maybe something like a lighting retrofit. And once the project's done, they kind of let it sit. And buildings, as we see them, are, you know, ecosystems, ever-changing, ever-evolving. And it's so important for that ongoing management, monthly tracking of how your buildings are performing so that you can really achieve modern energy management. So I really love that piece.
Yeah, and Amber, it's worth noting too that, you know, it's not just about how many kilowatt hours are being consumed. It's also about the other factors that are going on in a building. How many people are there in a given day, in a given hour? what is the local weather like? You know, some buildings are located next to a river or where there's a lot of wind activities. Some are in the middle, you know, of a corporate park and have sun exposure from all sides. So even though, you know, the weather is what the weather is, it is hyper-localized. And so having additional data points, you know, about a building's operation, like the weather and the occupancy, can also really help to understand how the building is performing now and how it may perform in the future with different changes, because it is a living ecosystem, so to speak, and it's constantly has different variables thrown at it.
Could not agree more. Well, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier. We're seeing this trend of local laws and city mandates on energy consumption for the built environment. We definitely know it's happening in Boston and Orlando and New York and San Francisco. Almost every major city has some sort of regulation. And I'd love to hear your perspective on what this means for our industry.
Sure. So, you know, New York City has been a bit at the forefront of, you know, setting citywide mandates. And, you know, like I said, it started with benchmarking and then they added energy audits. And now they actually set a law to curb emissions. And so we're seeing similar paths taken in other cities throughout the country. Many of the cities that you mentioned, you know, already have those benchmarking laws in place. They already have those energy laws in place, and they are starting to adopt emissions limits on buildings. We initially saw, you know, states for the last, you know, 15 to 20 years setting renewable portfolio standards. So that means, you know, setting goals of how much renewable energy generation electricity mix is within a given state. Right now, 29 of the 50 states and the District of Columbia have various portfolio standards that they've set. You know, states like California, Washington, D.C., Hawaii, Maine, New York, Puerto Rico, and Washington State all have 100% renewable energy goals for electricity specifically, anywhere from 2040 in New York up to 2050 for some of the other states. So that, you know, that in and of itself, by greening the fuel mix, is going to help buildings with their emissions. And, you know, we're also with the United States pulling out officially of the Paris Climate Accords, we are seeing, you know, more and more cities and states set their own emissions reductions targets. So New York was certainly on the forefront of that, but I think we're going to see more and more cities especially set, you know, aggressive targets like reducing the emissions of buildings. So I think there's more to come on that front.
And for those of us who are listening from other states and other cities, what strategies can our listeners take from what we're seeing New York City implement and take those into their own cities?
Sure. So, you know, as I was saying, other cities are going to adopt their own initiatives based on, you know, their city constituents and the various politics and goals that the cities have, and of course state goals. And, you know, the states that are already starting to implement the benchmarking and the energy auditing programs are those municipalities that we would think are going to implement more aggressive emissions target programs. So, you know, we're seeing that both for new construction. So many of the local and state building energy codes require buildings to build to, you know, national codes and standards like ASHRAE 90.1. And some even require new construction to exceed the efficiency standards of ASHRAE 90.1 and others. But, you know, we're also seeing the energy codes start to be set for efficiency within the existing built environment and not just those new constructions. So, you know, the starting point, I think, for all of this is the benchmarking of the buildings and just understanding what and how a building uses energy and how that, you know, affects their emissions footprint. And from there, you know, we'll start to see more and more happen, you know, at the state and city level with actually setting real standards for reduction.
It's exciting to watch, and I think it's going to be a good move for the industry as a whole to really push people forward on, you know, our mission is to make the built environment more sustainable, and these laws and mandates are just activating action around that, which is exciting for me, and I'm sure it's exciting for you too. So, indeed. Yeah. So can you give us an example? I know you work with a lot of clients in the New York area. Don't feel like you have to name any names. But can you give us an example of a client you work with that's doing good work to prepare for local law 97?
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, we are very early on in the process. So these local laws were just passed earlier this year in the spring of 2019. So like I said, I've spent a lot of time meeting with my clients and clients-to-be to discuss, you know, how their buildings are currently using energy, how much emissions they're generating, and if nothing changed, how that would impact the building relative to the law. So helping them just understand whether the building is going to meet or exceed the emissions target. And what those potential financial penalties might be. And so, you know, this has only been the last 5 or 6 months, you know, of having these conversations. So I'm not going to say that, you know, a lot of buildings are jumping in and have already implemented, you know, a bunch of energy efficiency measures because of the law. However, what I would say is that it has been a catalyst to drive, you know, the building owners and managers to start to conduct energy audits or to sign off on some of those energy audits so they can start to identify various opportunities for those emissions reductions. And also, importantly too, it's been used as part of the capital planning and budgeting. So right now we're in the middle of budget season for a lot of building owners and managers. And they're looking at, you know, audits that have been done, cost estimates that they've gotten for different projects. And they're starting to, so what we're seeing now is really that the folks are including these capital improvement projects in their budgets, whether it's for 2020 or 2021. And this local law 97 is helping to really put these projects over the edge. So where a 3 or 5 year payback, you know, and something that may not have been at the end of its useful life now is seeming more attractive because, you know, not only is there a 3 or 5 year payback, but there's also the potential to avoid future penalties. And, you know, even though the law takes into effect in 2024, it's almost the end of 2019 right now. And so really buildings have 2020 through 2023, that's a 4 year period to actually implement those changes. And the sooner they implement those changes, the better they're going to understand how much that actually reduces their emissions, because the best engineers and the best audits are only, estimations of potential energy savings, and really the proof is in the pudding in terms of, you know, what your utility bill shows, because in the end the city is going to be looking at the utility reported data to determine whether or not a building should have a penalty or fine based on their emissions, which is directly based on the utility consumption.
Well, I feel like I've learned a lot about local law 97 from just chatting with you. So I can't thank you enough for sharing your wealth of knowledge with us. Since this is the Modern Energy Management Podcast, I would love if you would take some time to explain what modern energy management means to you.
Sure. Well, thank you for the kind words, Amber. I appreciate that. And, you know, modern energy management is certainly constantly, you know, evolving and changing, and there's always new tools to use and solutions. And then there's the tried and true methods. And, you know, one of the major trends that we're seeing right now throughout the commercial real estate world, and especially as it relates to modern energy management, is data. And building data, utility data, equipment data, that's the new gold for commercial real estate companies. And so the cutting edge commercial real estate companies are leading the pack by deploying various sensors, meters, third-party integrations to collect as much data about the operation of their buildings as possible, and then utilizing tools, dashboard systems to analyze that and ideally drive operational changes that lead to reduced energy consumption. So we're seeing certainly a centralization of that utility data and information, and combining, you know, the systems that, you know, track not just the technical attributes about the energy data, like your consumption or your demand, but also the financial attributes like your overall costs, your utility rates, real-time pricing information. So the modern energy management approach really is, you know, centralizing the data to really understand what's going on and how you can use that data to improve operations and also to identify, you know, future opportunities for reduction, and also to go back and take a look and see how much did that, you know, LED retrofit project, you know, really save our building. You know, and other trends that we're seeing, you know, within, you know, modern energy management certainly is more of a coordination between different departments within organizations. So back in the day, you know, it was the facilities and services groups that typically really ran point on anything energy related. Now there's much more buy-in and interaction with the accounting and finance departments, and sustainability, you know, is this overarching, you know, theme that touches on a number of the different departments. So, you know, the companies that I'm seeing that are really leading the pack on energy management, you know, have interdisciplinary teams that, you know, incorporate the facilities groups, the sustainabilities groups, the C-level folks, as well as the finance and accounting teams. And, you know, and those companies really are using, you know, a centralized information portal or dashboard to capture all that data and share that data, you know, across all parties that are, you know, need to know and affect that data. And, you know, another, you know, trend that we're starting to see is just the level of metering being increased throughout the board. So 10 and 20 years ago, the cutting edge trend was to, you know, gather the interval data for the building's master meter, or install your own shadow utility meter so that you could see when the building was using electricity, and but you wouldn't know where it was using electricity, you just knew when. So now folks are putting, you know, meters on everything, down to, you know, circuits within a panel board, down to individual pumps and motors and machines that are operating the building, and of course critical infrastructure, because it's very important to monitor the critical infrastructure within a building and understanding, you know, how it's using energy, you know, where, you know, it may fail, and how you may reduce that in the future. And then the other big trend too, beyond the actual metering of electric and gas using equipment is we're seeing a lot more sensors being deployed within buildings. So buildings are putting their own weather stations on top of the building. So they know what the local weather is and not just what it is for their metropolitan area. They're going beyond just occupancy data of how many cards have we issued to folks in the building to actually putting in sensors, whether it's at the turnstile or optical sensors to see the true flow of human traffic in and out of the building. And the smart operators are actually seeing, you know, that a lot of people leave for lunch between the hours of 12 and 2, so they can actually reduce their heating and cooling for that period and really drive energy savings. And then also we're seeing a lot of temperature sensors being deployed in tenant and resident spaces to provide real-time feedback loops to the building's heating and cooling systems. Because typically in the past, you would use an outdoor temperature sensor to set the heating and cooling set points within a building, but buildings heat and cool differently for a variety of reasons. Just within a building, you could have different sides of the buildings are heating and cooling more and less just based on the distribution of people or based upon the distribution of the heating and cooling systems or even where the sun is in a given point in the day. So having those temperature sensors throughout the building and getting real-time feedback, it really greatly enables buildings to better control and understand their building's operation. And so, you know, all those things have to come into a single point so that you're not dealing with multiple systems and having, you know, a centralized point for understanding your data and the trends and the relation between all that data so that you can make smart, you know, operational decisions to really drive, you know, efficiency.
I couldn't have said it better myself. There are really so many factors that go into modern energy management, and it's fun for us to see what our customers are doing, a lot of these things that you mentioned. But I think the most important one that I wanted to highlight was bringing together the different cross-functional teams and getting everyone on board with the building data. That is what we've seen to be the key to success. Bringing the workplace teams, the facilities teams, the sustainability departments together is key to the success as much as we've seen. So I love that you highlighted that. So we're coming to the end of our hour. This was a great conversation. I can't thank you enough for joining me, but we love to wrap up this show with words of wisdom, advice that you would give to building owners and other energy leaders on how to modernize their energy programs.
Sure. So to really sum up what we've talked about, and I do agree, I think the most important foundation of a modern energy management program is to create that interdisciplinary team, bringing in different members within an organization so that you can set goals that align with the organization's mission and then bring in all the parties within that organization into a team that is going to achieve those goals. And, you know, and it's a continuous setting of goals and seeing how you're progressing on those goals. So, you know, implementing, you know, these web-based dashboards that pull in all the data where you can actually set and see your goals and see how you're doing in real or near real time to those goals is really crucial in achieving those goals. And there has to be a continuous engagement with that data. It's both looking back, looking at where you are now, and then projecting where you'll be in the future so that you can track your progress, realize those goals, set new goals, and, you know, understand your positions with compliance and some of these new climate laws.
Well, Thomas, I think that was some great advice. And this entire episode is full of great tips and content for anyone in New York City who's looking for ways that they can meet local law 97 and other mandates. But really, truly, across the United States, you know, a lot of these laws are similar. And I think a lot of the things that you mentioned will transcend across for all of our listeners. So thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you, Amber. I really appreciate the opportunity to discuss Local Law 97 and various approaches to modern energy management. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And I hope that you come back next year and give us an update on all the progress we've made in 2020.
I certainly look forward to that. I'll be waiting for your email.
Great. And for all of you listeners out there, thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Modern Energy Management Podcast. We're here every week with great stories and topics and relevant industry news for building owners, energy managers, and sustainability leaders. We will be back next week with more great episodes for you. Until then, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. And if you like what you hear, give us a rating on the Apple Podcast Store. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, we'll see you next week.